Hello, everyone, and welcome to Those Forking Fangirls, where we talk all things nerdy book, TV, movie, pop culture, fandom, and how they integrate into our adult lives. I did take a breath there. This is episode 20. I'm Natasha.
And I'm Christine.
And today we're talking our favorite book and least favorite TV show adaptation. So the pros and cons of turning a book into a TV show. We're listing just a few, but we have a lot of opinions.
I mean, I think we have more than a few because I added extra categories. Originally, yes, we had a rule that like you had to have watched the show and read the book beforehand, or, you know, just watched and read both of them so we can do a comparison. But we quickly found that a lot of the show adaptations, we've only watched the show. Yes. So we have three of the best that we watched and read. And then we've got like five that we've only watched, but they were phenomenal. And then we're also going to do our worst booked TV adaptations list.
Well, you have five. I think I only put three down, but whatever, it's fine.
Oh, for the ones that you've seen and have not read?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I started thinking of a lot, and I was like, wait, I love all of these. How do I pick? At least I got to mention some of the other great ones.
Well, before we get into our main discussion, we're going to head into Snap, Crackle, Pop Culture News. Christine, what's your big news this week?
Oh my gosh. So my book, Better Together, is coming out in paperback April 11th, 2023. So very soon. If you haven't pre-ordered yet, I'm going to leave a link in the description. I'm going to leave a link in the show notes if you're interested. I would really, really appreciate your support there. Pre-orders are so important to authors' authorhood. Like, they make so much of a difference. So if you ever want to support your favorite authors, pre-ordering their books is a really, really effective way to support their career. Mm-hmm. But so that is available for pre-order. It comes out April 11th, but I'm getting to do two in-person events.
Yes.
For the book, which is so exciting because I haven't gotten to do any in-person events for Better Together. It came out in June of 2021. We were still not doing anything in person. There was like a couple random book events that were outside that I was like, can I do one like that? And they were like, no, none of the bookstores want to do outdoor events. So I did a virtual tour for Better Together. And while that was fun, it was not the same at all. So I'm going to get to do two events, one in Los Angeles at Annabelle's Book Club, which is a new indie bookstore in Studio City. And I will be doing that on April 15th at 2 p.m., which is a Saturday. And Taya Miller, who is a really talented cosplay artistic TikToker, and she's big on Instagram too. She's great. You should check her out. She's going to be moderating, which is really exciting. And so again, April 15th, 2 p.m., please come if you're in the L.A. area. I would love to meet you IRL, and we're going to have a fun discussion and sign books, and it's going to be so cool to be in person again. Yes. And the second event I'm doing is in Boise, Idaho, y'all. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be really cool. I've never been out there before, and it's going to be at the Boise Barnes & Noble, which has been such a supportive store. Mm-hmm. Whoever works there is so, so kind.
Her name is Tina. I met her.
Oh my gosh. She made a whole end cap of books that I like in honor of the Better Together paperback release. And it has like my two books and then books that I've recommended for through the years. And it was so, so cool. So I told my publisher about that and they reached out to them. And so now we're doing an event there and Natasha is going to be moderating. So it's kind of going to be a Those Forking Fangirls event.
Basically.
Better Together themed. So I'm really excited. And if you don't know, Better Together is, I've been describing it now, the vibes are like if the Parent Trap gals were in their early 20s, like quarter life crisis stage, and they were living the plot of the Holiday film with Cameron Diaz and mm-hmm. Jude Law and Kate Winslet. Like, they switch lives, they have romances happening, they learn a lot about themselves. It's really, really near and dear to my heart. So I hope you enjoy it if you haven't read it yet. And I hope you come out to an event if you're close and pre-order if it sounds interesting to you.
Also, her paperback has the bonus chapters at the end. Yes. Is it chapter or chapters?
Chapter. The paperback has a brand new cover. It's so pretty. It's my favorite Ravenclaw color vibes. Mm-hmm. And it has a bonus chapter. And it's much easier to read a paperback, in my opinion. It's so floppy and wonderful.
I love how your opinion has fully changed from hardback to paperback.
I literally like don't want to read hardbacks anymore. I know. They're so hard in my hands.
I don't like them anymore either. Well, we're very excited. I will be at both events.
Yes.
Obviously, I'm moderating the Boise one, but I will also be in support in LA as well.
Thank you. Oh, can I just say, I forgot. The Boise one's at 4 p.m. on April 16th. April 16th.
It's a Sunday.
It's a Sunday. Yes.
And my family will be there, too, because I'm always back and forth from Boise. So I just went there like a week and a half ago. And I went into the Boise Barnes & Noble and like I got to meet Tina, who put it all together. And so, yeah, we're very excited. And my little nephew will be there, too. Hopefully. We'll see. He's only like two, so he might not make it through the whole thing. Okay, so I didn't have a lot of news that really spoke to me this week, aside from the fact that Taylor Swift has now had four or five.
I feel like it's got to be more, right? Now
she only had like two in Arizona, and then the two in Las Vegas. Yeah. And it's been just a minefield, I guess, out here if you're a Taylor Swift fan. I don't know how everyone feels about spoilers, but Christine and I are trying our hardest to stay away. Like, I don't understand people who, like, our friend Taya, who's moderating the LA signing, she's coming with us to the concert that we're going to.
In August.
She watched the first, like, 10 minutes of the show. And then, guess what? Alex, yesterday, I come downstairs and he's like, I just watched the first 7 minutes of the Taylor Swift concert. It looks really fun. I was like, don't tell me anything! I'm like, why?
Amy said she watched the entire live stream opening night. It's just like, it's so special to be there in person and not know what's going to happen and what songs are going to be sung. Like, I can't imagine doing that. Once I paid so much money for a ticket. So I don't want to be spoiled at all. In the morning after the initial show, I get a text from my cousin being like, what did you think of the set list? And then the entire set list. And I'm like, I threw the phone. So mad.
I can't, like, my family, I'm in the same boat. I was in Boise, and then the morning that I woke up, I'm sitting there, like, trying to avoid spoilers as it's, like, all on my feed because I've been fed Taylor Swift, like, my entire life on social media. And my cousin Miley goes, like, did you know that there are blah, blah, blah songs on the set list? I was like, and I was on the phone with Christine. I was like, what?
She started yelling at her. I mean, that's what I did to my cousin, too. It was, like, all caps texting.
I understand people, like, I don't know. We spent a lot of money. And I was thinking about, like, who was asking me about this? My friend was asking me. She's like, oh, when do you see it? I'm like, August. And she goes, August? I'm like, yeah, that's when she's coming to LA. I didn't even think about spoilers when I was buying tickets. Like, I didn't even think about going to another city, you know? Like, we just were like, we're going to wait until.
How it works with the concert.
Yeah. All of our friends are going out, like, to flying everywhere else. So, I don't know.
I'm not judging people who do that, obviously, but, like, for me, I don't, like, that doesn't feel special to me. I'm going to tell the story of what happened with, I was supposed to go to the second show. I'll tell it in the fangirl tea time today, but it was tragic and I did not get to go. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, like ever since I got those second tickets, I felt like weird about having tickets to two shows because I just feel like there's so many people who wanted tickets. I don't know. I just like, I couldn't, I felt weird about it. And then of course the universe was like, fuck you, you can't go anyway. So it was upsetting. But anyway, I don't want to see any, when I posted that I'm dodging Taylor Swift spoilers everywhere, I've gotten so many messages on Instagram. Like, how could you possibly do that? I'm like, I did it before and I can do it again. I'm a fucking expert, okay? It washes right past my face. I go, whoop, next thing. We both muted Taylor Swift.
I muted Instagram. Half my friends by this Me too. Point. Yes, and you did Taylor Swift. The only place that she comes up now is TikTok sometimes. And then sometimes, like, because I was looking up Era outfits, so then on my Pinterest, her, like, Era's outfits for the show were coming up.
Oh, my gosh. This is kind of like, to me, it feels like an anti-spoiler, and I don't know if my neighbor was telling me this just to appease me, that I wasn't being spoiled when I saw spoilers, but don't correct me if this is something that she lied about. But she said parts of the set list are rotating, so they're getting different songs. So,
okay,
that's great for me to hear. It makes me feel better when I see something pop up and I'm like, ooh.
Okay.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm reading messages.
Yeah. Okay. Let me just say that if anything Taylor Swift related happens, please at me.
Yes. We won't know.
We're not going to know. So please, like, at me and Natasha on Instagram or Twitter somewhere. Please text me if you're a friend who has my number, because people just assume that I know everything and don't tell me anything anymore because one time I talked about how everyone had sent me a message about something. Please send me a message. I will not know.
She won the Billboard Music Award. She was at iHeartRadio last night in this really cool outfit. And she was
wearing Reputation. I saw it. I thought it was old. I was like, what is this?
No, she's wearing a hood. It was really cool. I loved it.
That's Reputation. Reputation.
Anything is a spoiler at this point. Okay, let's move on to what right now. Christine, have you been reading anything lately?
I have been reading The True Love Experiment by Christina Loren. It has been my, like, before bed lull me into a calm so I can sleep book. It's been very cute. And I don't know if I like it more than my favorite Christina Loren so far. I think I still like Something Wilder better, but it's very enjoyable.
Okay, I'm excited to get to it. I did hear your critiques, but I'm interested to see. Because I've read, like, a few books about, like, a reality TV show, and it's not always, like, the biggest plot point. Like, it's kind of, like, there, and then they use it as, like, a device to, like, move the character. So I'm interested. I have been reading, I read The Other Merlin by Robin Schneider, one of Christine's good friends, and I moderated her book signing in Orange County, and I really loved it. It's like this fun, like, cute twist on the, like, King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table, you know, classic story, and there's, like, a whole twin swap, which I thought was fun, because I have a twin brother, and so it's a really cute and fun retelling if you guys are, like, in the mood for a little, like, fantasy novel. And her second book, The Future King, just dropped. So
yeah, it's very She the Man, which yes. I love.
And Mulan.
And it's She the Man and Mulan kind of combined. She's the Man with Amanda Bynes. You know the movie. It's a classic. It's really funny. And the love interest is, like, a book boy that I love.
Mm-hmm. So TV shows. We watched a lot of TV.
We did. It's been a big week for TV. Everything's coming back. You season 4, I forgot to write down, but that was fucking wild. Did I talk about that in the last episode? I don't know. But
you mentioned
no one I know has watched it. Yeah. It's so good. Daisy Jones. We've both devoured it. I fucking loved it. And I've been listening to the album while I write.
I don't think I have felt chills like that in a while, where something like so right from the book just like came, was on screen in front of us. I wanted to put this on my list, but it's like maybe number four. But yeah, we both devoured it. I was a mess in the last episode because I forgot a lot of what happened at the end, and I was trying not to remember so that I could have those reactions again. And then it's interesting because TikTok is kind of pulling scenes from the book about how certain scenes went down and how they went down in the book rather than the TV show. And it's interesting to see the differences there. But I think I loved the TV show. I just loved everything about it. It made me love the characters more. It made me want to fight for them more. Like Cammy, Camilla, she was fantastic. That actress, I really hope to see her in other things. I loved it.
Yeah, she was excellent. Sam Claflin was just so good as Billy Dunn. He really was the show for me, you know? I mean, everyone else was great. I really loved his brother, too, and Suki Waterhouse.
Yes.
I think they were both really great and kind of a nice little heart. And I also like Simone and her whole storyline.
Yeah.
That's not even in the book, really. I don't think she's in the book at all, unless I don't remember her at all. I don't know. I just remember Daisy being alone all the time.
Yeah.
I don't remember her having a close friend. Mm-hmm. So that was really nice. And I don't remember her husband in the book. I don't know if that was a very small plot point that I don't remember or if that was just added for the show.
I think he was in the book, if I remember.
Yeah, I don't think we didn't see her go to Grace, though, which we see in the show.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very, very good. And I'm excited to watch it again. And I can't not mention Yellow Jackets motherfucking season 2 has started, and I went to go watch it, but Yellow Jackets is like Lost, where like there's a lot of stuff going on and you want to remember all the little details so that when stuff starts to reveal itself, you remember why you wanted to know it, you know what I'm saying? So I'm rewatching the first season because it's only 8 episodes and I'm already on episode 6 of my rewatch, so and then I can jump right into season 2 knowing all of the things. And I'm fucking loving it all over again. It's so good. It's on Showtime. But if you have Paramount Plus, you can get Paramount Plus and Showtime bundle for just $2 more a month. So that's what I did. Yeah.
Yeah. It's Alex and I have been wanting to watch it, but we already pay for everything. And it's like the last thing I want to pay for is Showtime.
Yeah, they've got a nice bundle on Paramount because they're, like, blending together for their streamers.
That's good to know. Two of my other favorite shows started. I'm just going to mention them. Sanditon, the third and final season started, and I just need to binge this show. It's like they have just put every kind of, like, historical period drama crack into that show, and I need the full season now. just like so many like wanting stares and hand touches and like just little things, you're just like, I need more. And then The Mandalorian is back, and every single fucking episode of The Mando so far has been so good. And little Grogu he's growing up. He's got tricks. He's saving people. He's just everything. And then last, I watched season 2 of Sex Life on Netflix, and it was mid. It was not at all as good as the first season. It was only 6 episodes, and it was a lot of life and not a lot of sex. And then they just wrapped it up in the last, like, 15 minutes.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Can I just tell you that Love is Blind is back? Yeah. Katie just said it. Love is Blind is back. I didn't find out until 2 days ago. My neighbor was like, you know, there's a new season of Love is Blind. And I was like, are you fucking kidding me? How did I not know?
So quick.
Nobody told me. So I'm so excited to watch that. But since I'm on deadline for April 9th, I'm kind of thinking I shouldn't start it right now. Well, I might cave, but I haven't yet.
Do they not have like the full season yet? Is it only like...
It's like the first five episodes or something. So it's like half the season, the first chunk that they release. Mm. So it's really fun to binge. Like you get sucked into that shit and then you can't think about anything else until you finish. So I might cave, but right now I'm holding out because I'm doing Yellow Jackets. So got something that I'm watching.
And then neither of us watched movies this week unless, oh wait, you have one more show you want to talk about.
Did I? Oh, Ted Lasso started back up. Yeah. I fucking love Ted Lasso's so good.
It's so good. The second episode I liked a lot better than the first.
I was just going to say the second episode was so great. I teared up. I had so many emotions. It was very, very good.
And it was hilarious.
And it was very funny. I was laughing the whole time too.
Oh, I've been watching Shrinking too, Nicole. That's been good.
I've been curious about that because Han Solo is in it. And I'm like, why is he doing
this? He's funny. Like, I don't understand why he's in the show because it feels like, like, why would he do a TV show? But he's great.
I might investigate that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we don't have any movies this week, but we do want to say thank you to everyone who supports us. And if you're interested in supporting us in a larger way, we do have a Patreon where we have a few different tiers and a few fun perks. Our main perk is Fangirl Tea Time. And Christine kind of already spoiled or teased that we will be talking about her Taylor Swift story in that. And it's just like a deeper way for us to connect with our audience. So if you're interested in that, check it out, Patreon. Link is in the show notes. And then we also have a visual version up on YouTube, so hi to everyone there. We love our visual version because obviously we started on YouTube and it is so fun for us to interact with you guys in the comments there. So if you are listening and watching there, just hit that like button and leave us a comment. And so thank you all.
Subscribe for free to our YouTube channel. Make sure you're following the show on your favorite podcast app. That really helps us out. It's free as well.
Yes.
You can leave us a review and on your favorite podcast app, rate the show 5 stars if you're enjoying it. This is all really, really helpful and free ways to support the show if you can.
Yes. All right, let's move into our main discussion. Yay! Okay, so we...
Sorry, I didn't want to whoop because of my voice.
yeah, Christine was... We were both sick, but she was more sick, and so she kind of lost her voice, so we've had a healing journey, so I'm taking over.
We were off last week because my voice was totally fucking shot. So I'm working the muscle back up, but it's still not back to normal yet.
Christine, I don't know what you put in. What you want me to ask this question up here?
I'll start us off here. All right. So, so we're going to be talking about our... Wait, give me 1 second. Okay. I'm like a little scared to talk today also, which is like not helping. Okay. So today we're going to be discussing our favorite book to TV adaptations. We're going to be going through a couple different categories, but we're going to start off with the best of the best that we've read and also watched and approve 5 million stars of the way that they adapted the book because they did it perfectly. Natasha, why don't you start us off with number 3 on your perfect book to movie adaptation that we read and watched list?
Yes. So we did this list a while ago when we did our favorite book to movie adaptations, and I changed mine a little bit. So my third is actually going to be Jane Eyre, the 2006 BBC version. You can watch.
I've watched this.
You have?
Yes, and I liked it.
Yeah,
I know what Jane Eyre's about because I watched this.
Oh wow. Okay, my mom showed me like Emma when I was really young, but I remember her like telling me the entire story of Jane Eyre, and we had watched the movie version when I was young, And my mom was a really good storyteller, so she, like, really, like, revved it up for me. And so then at that point, like, we had watched that film, and then we watched the other film. There's multiple versions of Jane Eyre by Charlotte Bronte. And I ended up reading the book when I was in my, like, reading classics era. And then I had watched Jane Eyre, the TV show, because I think it's about 5 or 6 episodes. And it covers everything in the book. And the two actors in it are super talented. I know the girl who plays Jane is from The Affair. And I think the guy, I know him from like a James Bond movie. But I think they adapted that book so perfectly because they could put everything in it. Like, the journey that Jane has is so long and tumultuous,
and it kind of feels internal a lot of the time, right? Mm-hmm. They do a good job with that.
Well, because we start with her like as a young girl in the orphanage, and to see how the way she's treated, how she lost her best friend, and then her journey to become a governess, and then her falling in love with Rochester, and then everything to do with like the twist at the end, which kind of makes it more of like a gothic romance from that time. And then, like, I forgot, because the movies usually just cut this out, but they cut out her journey from leaving the house that, you know, she was there for so many years, teaching the daughter and falling in love. And she goes this whole journey, and then she comes back years later after, like, she finds out the truth of what actually happened.
I don't remember the truth of what actually happened.
Do you want me to spoil it?
Yes. Okay. Can I forget? I watched in like 2016.
So if you guys have not seen Jane Eyre, maybe don't listen to this part, but because it is like so fun. But she falls in love with Rochester, and she is the governess of his pupil. It's not actually his daughter, but he is actually still married, and his wife has kind of gone at that point. In history, they would just put her like in an insane asylum, but she probably is dealing with Bertha is dealing with a lot of like mental illnesses, and she's like locked up in the tower. And anyways, they start falling in love, and he asked her to marry him. And through all this time, there's a lot of creepy things happening, like Bertha, you don't know it at the time, but Bertha like sets his room on fire and like tries to like strangle Jane. Like, there's a bunch of like different little things that happen that are kind of like allude to like this creepiness, like maybe there's a ghost in the house. I don't know.
That's why I liked this, because it wasn't boring like Pride and Prejudice. It had like creepy shit happening.
Yes.
And I was like, what's going on?
And they literally get to the altar, like they're about to get married, and then Bertha's brother, his wife's brother, is like, you can't get married, this man is still married. And then like it's just a huge twist, because you feel you can see it on Jane's face, you can, you know, when you read the book, you're just like, what, this betrayal? No, like they're so in love. And so she just flees. Jane flees and doesn't turn back. And then she goes, like, she starts her own school and teaches girls how to read, you know, it, and is a teacher. And then this is probably about 5 or 7 years. You find out that the house that Rochester lived in that night, Bertha burned it down. And he's trying to save her in the fire, but she doesn't want to be saved. So he loses his eyesight. And I don't know who comes back to tell.
Took a hard dramatic turn.
I don't know who comes back to tells Jane that like Rochester's like alive and the house is burned down. Like she hears about the whole history. And then she comes back to be with him. And finds out that he's blind, and then they fall back in love. But it's just like such a tragic love story that has a happy ending.
I was just gonna say, they got the happy ending. Yes. So it's romance.
Yes, it is. So but the Jane Eyre TV, the 2006 TV show is great, because it goes through all of that journey, and you're with Jane for the whole thing.
Yeah, it was good. I don't remember much of it, obviously. Natasha just like told me the whole story like it was the first time.
I know, you were like so invested.
I know, I was like, I need to hear what happened. But it was really good. I remember really enjoying it.
Did you watch it because I told you to watch it?
You know, I'm remembering why I watched it now, and I'll tell you later.
Okay. All right. What's All right. your number three of your okay. top?
Okay. My number three is Shadow and Bone. I just remember the first time I watched the pilot of this show, and I was in, like, I had tears in my eyes the whole time, because, and I wasn't like crying, I was just like tearing up because it was so well done. You know, I had, and mm-hmm. it's been so long since I'd seen a book that I cared about translated in such a perfect way. Like, when I saw Jesper, when I saw Nej, when I saw, you know, Nina and Matthias, I just got the chills. And Kaz, who has grown on me, but at the beginning I was like, I don't know about him, and now I'm like, no, he's great. Everyone is perfectly casted. And I, when I saw Ketterdam looking the way it did, and the way the cinematography was, and the score, it's such a good adaptation. And I'm gonna say season one is better than season yes. two in terms of pacing and the way that the story is told, but season two is still really good, and it's such a fun watch. It's one that you might have to watch again because they jam-packed multiple books into this one season. You're getting like key parts of Crooked Kingdom in this second season, so definitely if you haven't watched yet, I would highly recommend reading at least Six of Crows and Crooked Kingdom beforehand, because those books are absolutely phenomenal, and it's just, it's pulling different plot points and utilizing them in a kind of different way to make them work for season two. And they're going to do Six of Crows in season three. They've like completely set up for that to happen. And I was just a giddy ass bitch these last like four episodes of the season with the crows, because we were getting all this Crooked Kingdom stuff. And I was like, am I going crazy, or is this Crooked Kingdom? Like, I had the best time with it, but at the same time I knew that if people hadn't read these books yet, it's going very fast in the show in the second season, so it might be hard for the average viewer to really appreciate what's going on. So
yeah,
I would highly recommend, if you haven't watched season two yet, read the two Six of Crows books. You don't have to read the Shadow and Bone trilogy. They did a really good job with season one with that, and I feel like you get what's happening there, unless you really want to obviously read them. But the Six of Crows are on another level, and those characters are really the heart of the show for me. And to appreciate them to their fullest dimensions, really reading those books is going to make a huge difference for you. Because I know Natasha was saying that she was kind of like in a whirlwind while she was watching because it was going so fast, but me over here, I was like, oh.
It kind of, season two kind of lost me a bit, because at points it was going slow, and then at points it was going fast. It, like, it would just skip, and I'm like trying to follow the, like, the character development, because I think I only read the first Shadow and Bone book. I think I started the second one, but I don't remember the prince at all. So I was like, I don't know who you are. And then I never read Six of Crows, because I felt like I needed to read Shadow and Bone, and the last thing I wanted to do was sit through.
I keep telling people this. I didn't read any of the Shadow and Bone books before I read Six of Crows, and Six of Crows was my favorite.
Yeah.
And then I went back and read them, and it was fine, but you did not need to read them beforehand. Okay. They can stand alone. But yeah, so with Shadow and Bone, the first season is the book Shadow and Bone, and it is a prequel to The Crows. So you haven't, none of that is from the books with the crows that you see in season one. And then season two, they're doing book two and three of Shadow and Bone, and they're pulling major plot point moments from Crooked Kingdom, which is the second Six of Crows. So that's really a lot of content that they like pulled and brought in to season two. And I didn't read this, but there's a different like tales and myths from the Grishaverse that Lee put out. And I think that story with the woman with the sword that we see in season two is from there. And they integrated that with the crow's story this season. So it was a lot that they put together. And I think if they had slowed it down a bit, it would have been a lot easier to take it all in because it went very quickly. But it's a very high-paced season. And I really like the way they ended it.
I did too.
I was very happy with the end, and I'm very excited about next season. I also, there's like a really on-the-nose nod to Six of Crows fans in this season that I just fucking loved. Like, you know the moment I'm talking about, Natasha? He's like, how many of us are there?
Oh, yeah.
And he's trying to come up with a name for them, and I was like, this is great. Only Jesper could say these lines and really make them work like he is.
Where were we? Okay. Your second one. Okay, so yeah, Shadow and Bone is really, I think, doing a very good job, and I'm excited to see where they go from how they set up for the plot of Six of Crows. I was just waiting for Judah Parham, and came, and they did it really well.
Well, that, and it's like they've done a lot of different things with Alina and Mal, so
we'll and Nikolai
see. Yeah,
they're giving Nikolai, I think, some time to shine in season three, where there's maybe a triangle with Alina a little bit, so I'm excited.
Yeah. Okay, my second I think best book to TV adaptation is The Witcher. So I read the first two books, and they're not great, okay? Like, people love The Witcher because of
the video game,
yeah, which the video game is an adaptation from the book, but the first season of The Witcher is actually based on the prequel book, which is like all these like little stories about like who the Witcher is. So it's like before Ciri, and so yeah, truthfully, like, the show is much better. It was nice to, like, read it and, like, kind of get, like, a sense of, like, the world and everything. But the show in itself is just so fun. I just love that we have this, like, super rich fantasy world that people love. And obviously, Henry Cavill. And it's so funny because, like, people, like, didn't think Henry Cavill was hot until he put on that white wig. And I was like, where have you all been?
Yeah, honestly, like, I only like him in the wig.
No!
I only like him as Geralt. And
he's just, it's such a great character. Like, it's such a, I love grumpy Geralt. Like, I love
his... You know who I'm in love with from that show, though? The witch. What's her name?
Oh, Yennefer.
I want to say Yennefer. Mm-hmm. Yes, I was going to say Yelena.
Yeah, I know,
Yennefer.
Me too.
I love her, and I ship them so hard. And that's one of the reasons season two wasn't as fun for me, because it wasn't till the end where they started to be in the same place again.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, that's the whole thing is, and also there's the other girl, Triss. So like Geralt, obviously endgame is Yennefer, but like he has like, yeah, this whole like little affairs that he has throughout like the whole gameplay and the books, but like endgame is Yennefer. She is very different. I do have to say her characterization, I feel like, is very different from the games and the books.
She is so compelling in the show, though. Yes. And her story feels so, I don't know, adjacent to Manon in a way, not in any like obvious way, but in these subtle touches in the way that the witch arc is in the show was reminding me of the Throne of Glass books in the best possible way. And I was getting all giddy about it feeling like they were in that same place where the witches are in the Manon books, where we meet a lead. I can't remember because it's been a long time, but I just know I connected those in my head, and I was all giddy watching all of her those episodes. I love witch stuff in TV done right. Like AHS, American Horror Story Coven, fucking perfection. I didn't like any of the other seasons of that show, but season three of American Horror Story, so worth the watch that I've watched it multiple times. Okay, I don't like scary shit, but they do this witch school so well. I fucking love it. I think the first season I really did enjoy, especially because it's like so good when they finally come together. But they also do it so well because there's multiple different timelines within the first season, and all you want are these three characters to come together. Well, one, him and Ciri. In The Witcher.
I didn't give a shit about Ciri in the first season.
Oh, I did.
If you knew who she was, I think you gave a shit, but I didn't care.
Yeah, the thing is, in season two, they kind of changed the dynamic with Yennefer and Ciri. And that, I didn't necessarily love what they did with like Yennefer and Ciri, and like how they changed Yennefer to kind of be more of a person who is very selfish. I mean, she is a very like old witch, and she's been around for a sorceress.
She's also going through something so traumatic where she's lost all her, she's lost all of her, power, but like not just in not literal power. She feels lost without having her power to exercise over people, because that's what she's leaned on for so many years. And that, I think, really lends to some selfish decisions that she's making when she's in a bad place.
Yeah. And those things don't necessarily happen within the books and the games. So I didn't love that. But
yeah, Katie is saying that Ciri gave her Aelin vibes, and I could feel that in season two.
Oh yeah, for sure. And I'm kind of sad to see like what happens when Henry leaves after the third season.
Oh, I forgot.
Yeah, I know. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, I don't have much faith after that. I've kind of set aside that The Witcher in my head, so I don't get disappointed. Like, I thought about it for this list for like half a second because I saw it on your list, and I was like, I don't even want to talk about it.
I know. I hope that they kind of like wrap it up in like a nice, like pretty little package that maybe, you know, it like we can just stop there and be satisfied, or they might be like leave it off on the cliffhanger again. But honestly, one of my favorite tropes in television right now is the whole like father figure, like found father trope, and like acting like a father figure. And like that's in The Witcher, it's Pedro in Mando, and in The Last of Us. And it's so good. I love these like very attractive actors playing little daddy figures. It's my favorite.
It is all over the place right now in like the big hot TV shows. Mm-hmm. All right.
What's your second?
Hi, Naomi. So the number two on my list is Daisy Jones and the Six.
Oh.
Yes. Like I said, I fucking loved it. I know some people had some minor critiques, but those scenes stick in my brain. Like, I could pull up all of these different moments that had such an emotional impact on me. Like, that one scene with Cammy in the first, like, second episode when she comes to find him on tour.
Oh, God.
It really hit so hard. It was such a good scene, and she really shined in it. And there are so many moments like that with Sam that really stick in my head. The moment when he and Daisy first sing together.
Mm-hmm.
Just everything with them in that house where they were first writing together really sticks in my brain, like by the pool. I remember one of the scenes in the book that really stuck out to me was when Daisy was at this party and she was really, really just drunk and high, and I feel like she almost drowned and Sam saves her. And it's kind of different in the TV show.
Yeah.
But the image of her in that pool really pulled that scene right out of my head, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like in the book she like jumped off the roof into the pool. Did that happen? Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Anyway, I just seeing them perform, like, and actually, like, hearing the songs just made the book come to life in a whole new way. I almost think that this is one of those mm-hmm. moments where it's almost better.
Yeah.
I don't know. The audiobook is excellent. So I feel like I kind of watched it that way because they had a full cast. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. They're all like different versions of art.
Well, I think the songs and the fact that they had everyone play their own instruments and sing and like be a band, like they're one of their first things that they did is have them perform for the crew. And I just think the songs and all that enhance it so well. Like, and the fact that they keep replaying these songs and like you want to hear
Oh my God, I know what it is. I was listening to it all day and you just said it wrong. And now my brain's like,
look at us now. Look at us now. Thank you, Abby. Like the fact that you want to hear them sing Look at Us Now, because that is the best song. Like it's so true. Like I want them to go on tour. Like they need to be a band now.
Well, they're out of time, you know, like they belong in that time.
Yeah.
Like it's captured so well. The 70s in every aspect of the music and their performances and their experience. And I love her outfits on stage. I love seeing Daisy on stage, mm-hmm. you know, because again, she captured that so perfectly. And seeing them sing together, like on the mic, and seeing Camila in the crowd was done very, very well. Mm-hmm. I also love You Regret Me and I mm-hmm. Regret You mm-hmm. and Aurora.
And I need to listen to that one a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Okay. So my number, are you done? Sorry.
Wait, hold on. I just wanted to point out one other moment that I thought was really, really wonderful. When Daisy comes to that party and Camila is trying to convince her to join the band. Like, mm-hmm. I don't remember that also in the book, but I love that moment where they're all in the living room and they just start to sing mm-hmm. when the power goes out and, like, people are clapping and they're playing their instruments and it's, like, a really magical moment. And I feel like that song is a piece of Aurora. I can't remember because in the moment you don't really know what they're singing. It's just great.
Oh.
But I was just listening to Aurora and I was like, is this the song that they were singing like before it became Aurora? I have to watch it again.
Well, I the one scene that I like rewound and that was in the last, I think, episode or the, yeah. And it's when like Camila and Karen basically exchanged this nonverbal.
Yes.
Oh my gosh, it was like literally these two women know exactly what's going on and like their looks. Oh, it's so good.
I loved how perceptive Camila was and how she played it. Like mm-hmm. she really, it felt real in all those moments. She just saw everything. The moment where we see Daisy and Sam, I'm saying the actor's name sometimes, Daisy and Billy, just kind of conferring in this house together about their feelings mm-hmm. and you see from their point of view first and then Camila walks in and they kind of separate and then you see that she was watching from the door. Fucking heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot more heartbreaking when you see it in the show because I didn't feel like I knew Camila
mm-mm.
in the book at all. And it makes a huge difference seeing her played by this fantastic actress in the show.
Yeah. Yes. Agree. Okay. So my number one book to movie adaptation that I think just did it so well is Outlander. I read the first four books from Outlander. And those books emotionally scarred me. I stopped watching the show because I just couldn't take it anymore. Like, I can't take everything that Diana Gabaldon has put these characters through. And I'm only here for, like, a good romance and, like, just having to go with them and all of these tragedies and these things, these horrible things that happened to them. I can't take it, okay? So, like, Alex is up to date with Outlander, but I refuse. I was like, I cannot watch this show any longer. However, it's still one of the best book to movie adaptations. I still remember my feelings. Yes, Alex is an honorary fangirl. I still remember my feelings reading like the first two books. I think it was like 2013 And I was on like a beach vacation with my family, and I just devoured like the first two. Like, I remember staying up late and like crying in my little bunk bed at the beach house. And then watching the show while reading the first book was such an emotional.
That was 2014 because I was in California. Yeah.
That was such an emotional experience. Oh my gosh. Like, I remember sitting in my bed watching the wedding episode and then being so sad that I didn't have like this love in my life. Like, I was so lovesick watching like Jamie and Claire on screen, then reading this the first book, and then going into the second book knowing that they weren't together because now she's in like the modern day times was heart-wrenching. The book was way worse than the TV show. That was season two.
Drums of she was in France.
Yeah, no. In the book, you start in modern day times.
Oh,
and so you're like, what the fuck happened?
Can I? Okay, so the Outlander experience for me, I obviously started watching because Natasha was obsessed with it. And I think we watched. Did we watch? I think after you watched the pilot, did you watch it with me and Kat? Mm-hmm. I feel like we watched it all together, and I really liked it, obviously. And then season three is my absolute favorite season of this show.
Season three is great.
It is so good, and it gives you like all these like the warm happy ending feelings, and I just want to like end there.
Yep, that it should have just ended. Okay, she's not done three. But she's not done with the series. Like, she still has more to go. Like, there's still things in the book one. There's like a ghost of Jamie in the first book, and you don't know what that means.
I have no interest in like knowing that because I completely forgot about it, you know. Mm-hmm. But if you read the books, I feel like I would be compelled to keep going.
No.
To like know what happens. But here's the thing.
I tell everyone, like, you should read the first book and then stop. Because or else you're going to just go through this like emotional turmoil. Like, it's just, it's too much, honestly. So read the first book. If you want to read the second book, because then you're going to want to read the third book, because then you want to see them get back together. But the books, the everything else after number one is just full. They're 1,000 pages long. The longest books I've ever read. They're like Bible pages. It's full of history. A lot of it is not mostly Jamie and Claire together. That's like book one. And then you have everything with Brianna. So it's a lot of history that you're also ingesting at the same time.
It's kind of like Dan Brown, but more romantic. Because there's a lot of just factual things you learn while you're reading those books about random art pieces and shit. But I like that. But anyway, if you watched Outlander and you stopped at season two, which is the most depressing shit of all time, season two of Outlander.
Yeah.
I feel like I was just had the hardest time getting through it because I was just bawling every episode.
Yes.
But season three, like, just watch season three and be done, because it's going to make it feel so much better. And it is the most satisfying season because they're apart, but they're coming back together. And you get to see it all in the season. And it's so wonderful. It's like my favorite trope. Like time travel coming back together.
This is so painful.
Second chance love after a break. And it's great until they really, in season four, Brianna becomes a main character and that actress is not up to par.
No.
And the whole show, like, I can't even watch it.
Suffers.
Because she's really not good.
No.
I'm so sorry. But it really stands out how not good she is at acting to the point where, like, I can't watch the scenes.
Well, and also, like, what Brianna goes through in... Is it season three? Because she comes back. But does she come back in season three? Or was it the fourth season? I don't remember. But like the stuff...
Season four is where she's the lead character.
Season four, she comes back because she has to come back and like save her parents because there's no history of them. She finds out this history that their house is gonna... Whatever. The stuff that Brianna goes through is also extremely traumatic and triggering. I just... there's a lot of things that happen to her that aren't necessary. And that's where I drew the line. Like at book four, when I was reading it, I was like, okay, I'm done now. Like, I can't take this shit. And now, like the stuff that, and then I liked Roger, and then whatever happened with Brianna just ruined it for me. And I was like, I'm done.
Yeah, I didn't love Roger, but I liked him better than Brianna.
But also, like, we're not in Scotland anymore. Like, we're just in America at this point. And the Scotland is another character within the show or the movie.
Yeah,
the
books. I like American history stuff, but it was just too much Brianna for me. And then there was like people were getting smallpox. I can't remember what it was, but I don't know if it was Claire or Jamie who got it, and I was like, I don't want to see this.
Yeah.
But yeah, the first three seasons are really, really great.
Yeah. That's why it's my number one. It's a great adaptation. Aside from all the trauma, the first season, I tell everyone, you just need to watch the first one and then you're done. They're together. No,
third season.
No, but then you have to go through all of that stuff with number two.
Yeah, but like the third season's worth it.
I do like the second season. I love that moment. I like the second season because of the fashion. Like she wears, because they have money and she has like the best outfits in the second season. That's where she comes in the red dress.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking about.
And then there's also the yellow dress that she has, like, this hood over. Oh, it's fabulous.
I do remember those outfits. But in the third season, just, like, I'll never forget that moment where they reunite. Like, it's so beautiful.
I know. Didn't we watch that together?
I don't know. I feel like I was really frustrated because you weren't watching it and I was loving it so much and we couldn't talk about it. So I think I watched it by myself.
I watched them come back together because I was very, because it happens halfway through the season because that's what happens within the book. It takes so fucking long. Okay, what's your number one?
Oh, is it my turn? Mm-hmm. Okay, my number one is the book to TV adaptation of Looking for Alaska by John Green. It was so perfect, and just it was better than the book because they got to expand upon it in so many ways that you don't get to see these characters grow as much in the book version of it because it's so focused on the lead, but you really get to understand Alaska and the Colonel and all these different characters in really emotional, deep ways, and it's so much fun. It's made by the people who made the OC. Oh, I'm blanking on that guy's name right now. Josh Schwartz. Okay. So Josh Schwartz made this series for Hulu. It's like 8 episodes. It's so emotional and so funny and so perfect. It perfectly captures like 2006, 2007, the acting is fantastic. I just like all around, it's a happy, I don't want to say happy-go-lucky show because there's some dramatic trauma things that happen in it, but it has that upbeat feeling because it has a really great balance.
I've never watched this. Where can you watch haven't? It? No.
It's on Hulu.
Oh. It's on Hulu. I need to watch it.
It's so good. Yeah, you should watch it. You know what I really love about it? It's like a really, it's a love story, but it's told from the teenage boy's point of view, but he's really sensitive and you don't really see that, you know? I mean, I guess I've read a couple contemporaries from boy, and I'm talking about like heterosexual ones. I've actually read like a lot of emotional, beautiful, gay love contemporaries, but just like your heterosexual male contemporary doesn't usually like get me. And I've read a couple of them, but this one is really well done, and it's such a great cast of characters, and you have those feelings you have when you watch the OC where you just like love everyone and everyone's so funny, and yeah, it's great.
Okay, well, I need to watch that. Maybe this week. Okay, so we have top two books you haven't read, which are your favorite like adaptations. Christine has fucking 6 here. You don't get to go through all 6. You can list,
just, like, run through. Yeah
don't talk them. About it.
I don't have them in order, so let me just, like, put them in some sort of order. You go first.
Okay, well, I don't really have these in order either. I just love them all kind of equally. Obviously, we know I'm a huge historical period drama a connoisseur. I literally will watch anything that has a romance in it. So I don't love like the historical period dramas that really don't have like a romantic line. But my number three, like favorite shows, and I feel like this is a little easier to consume.
Digest
is Poldark than I would say Outlander. So Poldark is a classic book series that they turned into, I think, a 5 or 6 season, like masterpiece classic show. The guy who plays, what is Aiden Turner? He is so hot in this.
He's in Shadowhunters.
Yes. Mortal Instruments. He's amazing in this. Like swoony man. Like I love like him as Poldark. And his whole like the romantic connection he has with his wife Demelza happens like super quickly, but then there's like this other woman that he was also in love with for a long time. That's really irritating, honestly. Like that whole line within the show, there's a little bit of infidelity there, and I don't love that. But they are so swoon worthy together, and it ends, and like it has, the whole show has a great beginning and a great end. The middle is kind of wonky, but it's one of my favorites. And if you love historical like period drama, if you love Outlander, you need to watch this.
Yeah, you've told me to watch this multiple times, and I started it once and I only watched like 10 minutes because I was in the mood for historical drama, so I never got into it.
It's like, it is very dramatic. Like, it's not super funny, so maybe that's why you didn't love it as much.
Might be. I have to be in the right mood to like watch something that doesn't have the comedic relief, you know? But do you want to do your next one too?
You have 6.
Okay, I'll do a couple of my, like, well, okay. So at the bottom of my list, I've got The 100 because I fucking love seasons 1 through 3 of The 100. They are really, really good. And I can't ignore that. I love them so much. I named Bellamy after Bellamy, you know, from The 100. I love Clark. I've cosplayed as Clark. I love Clexa. You know, I love the ships in that show so much. And I was shipping Bellark so hard. And then things got like super weird and kind of the hosty in season 4 or 5. Mm. And I haven't finished the show. I feel like something bad happens to Bellamy because when I name Bellamy Bellamy, everyone's like, have you watched this season? And I was like, no.
Don't tell me. I don't need to know.
I know that Bellamy's gone through some rough, like season 3 Bellamy was like, fucking, he's going through some shit, but he came back around. So I'm sure, I don't know what happens to him. I don't want to know. I probably will eventually watch the last season. That's the one I haven't watched. Anyway, it's great. Yeah, Kat and I cosplayed Clexa, and it was my favorite. Like, we did a little music video sort of lip sync on my Pulmonez XX channel that I also love. So if you haven't checked that out, I'll link in the show notes. Anyway, then I have Game of Thrones down because I could not mention Game of Thrones. And fucking love it.
You were going to mention it, so I also agree.
Yeah, you didn't. Yeah. And then The Handmaid's Tale. Couldn't not mention that.
Also agree.
Yeah. I haven't watched the latest season because it's so dark that you really have to be in a comfortable headspace to watch it. Mm-hmm. And I haven't gotten there, but even now, they're knocking it out of the park in, like, season 4 and 5. I think with Handmaid, season 3 is my fucking favorite. Mm-hmm. I think that's when things come to a head in, like, the most satisfying way. So I would at least watch through season 3. But if you're not in the right space, like, not for you. It's very traumatic. Okay. You go.
Big Little Lies on HBO. I actually wanted to read this book. I think I read like the first 2 chapters, but it didn't really hold my attention. And the show really did. Like, the show was very captivating. I think I've seen it twice now. And then we have the second season, which is not the book, if I recall. It's just my favorite. The first season's so good. I love it.
A Big Little Lies. Yeah, it was really good. The second season was good too. Mm-hmm. It wasn't as good though. No. I can't remember what happened in it.
Yeah.
Was Meryl Streep in it or something?
Yeah. She played the grandma, the mom. Of Alexander Skarsgård.
Okay. My number three is You. You is based off of a book. I don't know if it's multiple books. I haven't read them, but the show is so fucking good. Is it just one book?
I think so.
Okay. They're still killing it, so.
Pun intended.
It's so good, and I just love that brand of television. It's like romance, but like the most toxic romance ever with a serial killer. Like, I loved Dexter too. Like, if you throw romance in with murder, I am on board.
I am not.
What's your number one?
My number one is Bridgerton. Okay, I am purposely not reading these books. I could very easily read them, but it's way more fun to watch it unfold on screen.
Yeah, I just rewatched season two while I was sick and had the best time. I mean, I was sick, so that wasn't the best, but I had the best time like getting lost in that season again and shipping the ship so hard.
It's so good. I know. I just have it on a constant loop. I'm just constantly rewatching it. I fell asleep on the couch to it the other day. Katie says
so many nice moments.
I know. Season two, there's so many moments where I'm just like, I'm just like squealing and like I can't help but like react. Like, anytime he is like, I am a gentleman. And then like at the last scene of like before they have sex with Rosario, and he goes like, and the smell of lilies. I can't. I'm like I love it too, even though I want to make fun of it. It's so good. Katie says the books are so good.
I love their croquet game. Is it called croquet? Whatever the fuck they're playing is my favorite thing. And then when they go, they get really competitive with each other. Like, that's my exact brand of like banter. And I love that scene. And then I love when they I love the ball where no one comes. That is my fucking favorite 3 minutes of the show. Do you know what I'm talking about? Yes, obviously you do.
No one
comes. They throw the ball and it's only their two families. And it's such a beautiful moment when he's like, we're going to dance.
Yeah. Okay. What's your number one?
Oh, I didn't do my number two yet.
Oh.
My number two is Conversations with Friends. I just love this series. I love how concentrated it is on nothing. It's just completely about character. And I don't need so much plot if we're getting so much character, you know? And if there's a romance, I'm on board. And I really, really enjoyed Conversations with Friends. I really enjoyed the nuance of all the relationships. And it's something that you don't usually see as the centerpiece of a television show in the way that it is shown. We really delve into the nuances of different types of relationships and why relationships devolve and evolve in these different ways. And I thought that was really beautiful in such a small, compact way. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense. And I am excited. I don't know if they're going to do a second season, but they left it off like they could. So I hope that they do.
I hope that they do too. And your number one?
And my number one is the motherfucking Vampire Diaries. I obviously had to have this as my number one. I haven't read the books. I hear the books aren't that great.
Yeah, they aren't.
But the show is so good. Natasha and I have recently rewatched it. I haven't finished my rewatch. I got to like, the end of season one. But you watched more than me.
To season five.
Yeah, and I was just so jealous when she was watching it because I had to stop watching to finish my book, and I was having the best time and getting completely obsessed with it all over again. And I still haven't finished because I get too obsessed with it, and I have to stop because I'm still on deadlines. But I just, every single episode of the first, like, four seasons, so, so, so invested. so good. Constantly, like, finding a new way to throw a new twist on things that throws your emotions into the ocean.
Okay, so our least favorite book to TV adaptations. So
the last category we have is the least favorite book to TV adaptations. And I only had one. I could not think of, there's not many bad ones because you have so much room to play with a TV show.
You could say the last season of Game of Thrones.
I can't say that.
You liked it?
I liked it up to like the last episode.
I guess so. I kind of did too.
Yeah, I was enjoying myself.
I mean, yeah, I didn't love everything that was happening with Danny.
Yeah, except for that.
Okay, well.
Katie knows what it is.
So I did write two down besides the one that Katie just said. So the Confessed TV show, I remember being really excited about this. This was like, I think, Colleen's first adaptation, and it was cute. It was just very like ABC Family. Like, I wish
it was.
I wish there was better.
I didn't finish it because I kind of got sad and made believe that it didn't exist. I forgot that it happened until I saw it on your list.
Yeah, and it was on some like weird streaming thing that we all watched on.
It was.
That was okay. I really hope that they do Colleen better. And you know what? I didn't read this book, so it's hard for me to say. But Discovery Witches season one, fantastic, amazing. Love the vibes. Love the romance. Like, some of those scenes are so swoony. Season two, on the other hand, was very boring. Like, they tried to do this whole Outlander thing where they go back in time, and I know that's like within the book, but for me, that was boring. There was not a lot of romance, and I'm here for the romance.
I didn't love Discovery of Witches either season. I didn't watch season two because I didn't like season one enough. I don't know. I didn't love the love interest. I didn't swoon so much. I was just like, I've seen this better. My mom's friend was asking for something to watch, and she was asking me if she should watch Discovery of Witches. And I was like, if you're going to watch a vampire romance, watch the best one, The Vampire Diaries.
I mean, the vibes are very different, though, like in Discovery of Witches. In Discovery of Witches. No, it's set in like London, and
it's just like, it's so slow, and it's so.
It is very slow.
And there's just, you don't get much payoff, and I don't love the lore so much as I like really love like all the mythology of Vampire Diaries. And before I'd recommend Discovery of Witches, I would be like Vampire Diaries and then True Blood. And then like, I don't know about Discovery Witches. True Blood is like the more raunchy vampire adaptation that's done really well. Like the first, I want to say even like five seasons of True Blood, really, really good.
Yes, very good. All right, what's our number one?
Number one least favorite book to TV adaptation has to be
Shadowhunters.
It hurts to even like bring it up.
I just, like, I wish Shadowhunters got the treatment that Shadow and Bone got.
It's just, yes, exactly. Like, I want someone who takes this seriously to get the property, because it's clear that they took it as like a teeny bopper show. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It was just like, it was not handled with the weight that it needed to be handled. Like, it needs to be taken seriously. And then those light moments will be really funny because the humor will be written better. You know, it felt dumbed down, and it was really upsetting. And I'm just nervous because, I mean, we've seen City of Bones happen, and like, they did a good job with the first 30 minutes, and then like, it got too complicated, and they didn't want to put in the time to like really build the world the way that it needs to be built. And then with this one, the TV adaptation, they had the time if they wanted to, but it was on ABC Family, so they didn't give it the weight that it needs to really be taken seriously and looked at seriously, and the lore was all over the place. Like, you have to plant the seeds of the book lore, and you have to go by that lore, because she has 9 fucking books based up off of it. So like, if you don't lay down those bricks the way that she lays them down, the rest of the story is not going to be able to unfold correctly.
Well, unfortunately, they've done it now twice, and we may or may not get.
Yeah. I don't know. I think eventually they'll try again, because her books are so successful. It would be sad to never try again with another company. But I'm sure she's going to be more careful with who gets the properties and stuff. And it's such a shame, because I love that cast. Like, we have been, you know, blessed to meet them multiple times. They're wonderful people. I love interacting with them. Mm-hmm. And the scripts and the editing and the actual show just was handled in a way that really didn't do justice to the source material.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Okay. Well, that kind of wraps us up. We do have one last thing. So what show adaptation are you really excited for that may be coming to our screens?
Percy Jackson is coming to Disney, and they're already starting writing season two. They haven't been greenlit yet, but Disney gave them the go-ahead to start developing it. So that's a good sign.
That's a very good sign. I wrote down The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo, but I think that's going to be a movie.
Yeah, I think that's a film.
Which I wish kind of, I wish it was a TV show. Abby, The Last of Us is a game, not a book.
Was it ever a book? No, right?
No.
Okay. The way you said that was like, it was a game. God, Abby, how could you not know?
Abby tells us everything, so I should not be saying that.
No, she's the one filling in all the blanks, and you're like, excuse me, you don't know this?
I know this one now. Okay.
The dude.
The Hulu does have the rights for ACOTAR, okay? I'm very scared, but also very excited for this. I just really hope that they do it well, because I don't want another situation like the Shadowhunters.
Honestly, it's hard to know who to trust with a fantasy. Like, I hope Hulu does it. Wait, does Hulu have it?
Hulu still has it.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. It's been in development for a long time, though. So the fact that it hasn't been churned out really quickly kind of makes me feel a little better about it. We'll see.
Yes.
Are we ready to move into the Fuck, Marry, Kill of the week?
Yes. This All is right. weird.
So I did this one.
So stupid.
Fuck, Mary, Kill. Christopher Walken.
Why?
Prince William or Willem Dafoe?
Were you just thinking of W names? Yeah. And these are the three that came to mind. Yes.
Well, I wanted to, once I got Christopher Walken down there, I knew.
Why would you pick Christopher Walken first?
He just came to mind when I thought of W's.
Nicole says, I feel like Christine's FMK options are always unhinged. Yes, they are. I don't even want to do this. Okay, well, obviously I'm going to marry Prince William, because then I'll be a princess. Shush. I don't know what I'm going to do with these other two. I don't want to kiss either of them. They're old.
One is the goblin.
Yeah, he's creepy.
He's horrifying.
We also met him in person.
I was so scared of him both times I met him.
What are you going to do with... I don't know. What are you going to do here?
I think I have to kiss Willem Dafoe, because Christopher Walken's really old.
Yeah, he's like grandpa age.
That would feel really weird. But I would want to murder the Green Goblin. Like, I'd get so scared. That, like, honestly, I think that's the scariest thing I'm the scared of most is the Green Goblin. Like, of all the monsters, Green Goblin is so fucking scary. That voice, that face.
Those eyes. Those horrible yellow eyes. Okay, well, I'm going to have to kiss Willem Dafoe. And then Christopher Walken is going to be pushed off a cliff because he's, yeah, that's it. Thank you. I don't know why.
Or we could marry Christopher Walken for his money.
Prince William also has money.
But you have to deal with the royal family. That's and that true. Shit is rough.
He's
that
also, shit. But he's also not cute anymore. Like he's, yeah, Prince he's William is,
you know. Very, yeah. Are you talking about Prince William? Because he's not cute either.
Yeah.
Anymore. Yeah. Christopher Walken off a cliff. Abby just said Christopher Walken off a cliff.
Katie says cliff Prince William and let England fall to baby George.
You know what? We should think about this from a strategic angle. I think maybe I should marry Christopher Walken because of the money. Because then at least one of these will get something out of it. And then Prince William for the drama, cliff.
Okay.
And then Willem Dafoe, kiss, because I'm scared to do anything else to him.
Okay, I can get behind that. And that way, like, part of the royal family can just, like, stop irritating Harry and
Meghan.
It'd
be tragic, though, for his kids.
Oh, yeah. That would be another Princess Diana situation.
Yeah.
Okay, triggering. All right, let's move on. Let's
not go there.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to move on to chapter chat. Today, we are talking chapters 28 and 29 of A Court of Thorns and Roses by Sarah J. Maas. We've been doing a reread very, very slowly, so you can very easily catch up to us if you haven't read ACOTAR yet. yeah, here we go.
Okay, well, chapters 28 and 29 were actually pretty short, and these are the chapters that Feyre goes back home. Now, I kind of remember this as, like, Tamlin going with her for some reason, but this is, like, that point in the Beauty and the Beast story where, like, Belle has to go back and, like, save her father, and then, like, you know, the Beast is in turmoil and or is in danger, and she has to come back and save him. So those are these chapters.
Evermore.
Yes, Evermore. This is the Evermore song. So these are these chapters for A Court of Thorns and Roses. Chris, I have a lot more notes than Christine.
Yeah, so these chapters were so fucking boring. I was like, no wonder I forgot about them.
No, they weren't. There were some good bits.
Ugh, I found them so boring. Well, I to be honest, I don't really like the book ACOTAR. I love the other ones. And so these were the worst parts of ACOTAR for me because I hated Nesta so much and I hated her family because they were terrible to her. So I think I just blocked them out. But basically, you know, she comes back. Tamlin sends her back with like egg-sized rubies and shit so that they're super wealthy. But she comes back and they're already like in a manor with tons of bedrooms. Mm-hmm. And doing super well because Tamlin fake had them invest with his fake company and then there were fake returns that got them really rich.
Mm-hmm. So there's a little bits here that I kind of pulled out. So when Tamlin was saying goodbye to Feyre, Lucien was like super angry. He's like, why don't you just let her stay a few days? And obviously I forgot about this. I'm like, oh, it's because of the curse that he wants her to say that, you know, she loves him, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, because he says he loves her.
And twice. She doesn't say it back. Yeah. And then I thought it was really interesting about what Pharaoh was thinking about the humans. And it kind of showed how, I don't really know what the word I want to use, prideful, prudish. She was like kind of looking down on them, being like all these rounded faces and
like
the food
condescending.
Yeah. And like how the food tasted like ash because it was so different from her experience in Perinthian.
Well, because everything is so heightened over in Perinthian, I guess. It's made her into a bit of a snob.
Yes.
In the human world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was like, she looked at her old lover, Isaac, and was like, he's so gangly and human.
Also, her sisters did not recognize her at first.
I know, because she must have been so emaciated from starving, I can only assume, and like being so stressed all the time.
Mm-hmm. They also found all of his missing ships. So all of her father's missing ships.
I feel like he just made those ships and was like, these are them.
That's true. It's a lot of magic working.
It's a bunch of magic gaslighting. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was basically chapter 28. Was her coming back. They're in this big house. And it's a whole different life. Okay. And then chapter 29, there's a little bit more going on.
Oh, wait. There's one other thing. Oh, wait. This is chapter 29. Never mind.
Okay. Yeah. So chapter 29, in the very beginning, we learned that her father is, like, back to normal, like, in very good health. Because a stranger gave him a salve. And now he's...
A magic salve.
And now he's back to normal. And obviously that was Tamlin. Or someone
he sent.
Yeah. And then in that one, we also learned that, she came back as, like, a wealthy woman with all these jewels, clothes, gold. And at this point, like, she feels like something foreboding is coming. Like, she has, like, the sense that she kind of left Tamlin and he's, like, in danger now.
Did you get the sense that Nesta kind of remembers what actually happened to Pharaoh? Because I did. I feel like there's something in her that knows that there was no aunt.
I wonder, because
she tried to go save her.
Mm-hmm. Which I forgot about that point. Mm-hmm. Oh, she does know. That's what Katie says.
She does know, yeah. Because I forget if she... It's revealed later. Okay, yeah. I forgot if it was revealed later, but I was like, I think she knows. I think there's something in her that can't be affected the same way by the magic because she's so stubborn-headed, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, she tries to go save her, and that really, like... touched some part of me, even though she's still being like withdrawn and bitchy.
Yeah, because she actually does care. I mean, mm-hmm. She didn't know what was going to happen to her, but the carriage broke down and then they had to turn back. Also, her sisters were writing to her the entire time, but then I love that they also don't remember that she can't read.
I know. I was like, why were they even fucking writing to her if no one taught her to read? Why wouldn't they teach her to read? That pissed me off too. When I think about that, like, why wouldn't you teach your little sister to fucking read when you're like in this situation where you're all just trapped together in this little tiny cottage?
Yeah. And then at the end of chapter 29, she goes and visits the cottage again and is reminded of how much she hated that place. And Elaine kind of talked about it earlier and how she kind of looks back.
She missed it.
She missed it, which I feel like I kind of related to because it kind of brought me back to, like, you know, the quarantine times and like being at home and not having, and like kind of looking back at that time and I don't know. It's
kind of like romanticizing the bits of it that were good.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Parts of life.
Because there was this coziness to some aspects of, like, being at home with your family and, like, not having to do all the other stuff, you know, because you couldn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what I feel like she's feeling. Because they're, like, when you're all together in one room, it's so different than, like, when you're all living your normal lives and everyone's going off doing their things all the time.
Yeah. So Christine thought these chapters were boring. I kind of liked being back. But we're getting down to the final act.
I want to get to the mountain.
I don't remember it. Like any of that stuff. So
I
know,
that's why I want to get to it. Yes. I need to analyze the fucking mountain.
All right.
That's what I want to deep dive. Oh, I want to really quickly point out that Elaine is like, we're going to go to the continent and look at flowers next summer. Do you want to come?
This is all just like... The way that the map is and the way that she said she wants to look at the flowers, it just feels like they're very much like on, like in the UK, and then she wants to go to the continent. Yeah, and then she wants to go to the continent and like to where, you know, where do they grow tulips?
It almost feels like...
Sweden?
No, that's too
Amsterdam.
Cold. Amsterdam. But it almost, I mean, when you look at the map, it looks like the UK next to Europe, but it almost feels like they're on their own little island, like they're in like Ireland or something.
Yeah, it's Ireland.
And yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
All right.
Well, that is our episode for today.
That's our show.
Thank you guys all for listening. Make sure you're following us on your favorite, like, podcast listening app. Leave a review, give us a like. We're also on Instagram as Those Forking Fangirls. Twitter is Fork Fangirls Pod. TikTok, which we have been uploading like our little clips from the show, that is Those Forking Fangirls. And then also YouTube, which is youtube.com/Those Forking Fangirls.
Yeah, our show is edited by Jake Needham and Alex Polis, with music by Cole Jenkins and vocals by Heather Traska.
Thank you guys so much for listening. We'll see you next week.
Yeah, we release episodes every Friday. We'll see you next week. And we'll be recording Fangirl Tea Time for all y'all patrons in about 10 minutes. We're going to be talking about different stories from the last 2 weeks that we didn't get to update you about. And if we get to it, we're going to talk about things we learned the hard way. So if you are interested in all of our Fangirl Tea Times, you can get them by becoming a patron and supporting the show in that way. And there's lots of other fun perks. So thank you all so much for all your support. Okay, actual goodbye now.
Bye.
Bye.